But what Lewis is really interested in is kind of the ghost part, the atmosphere part, and the death part, more really than anything else.
I'm William O'Flaherty. Welcome to another SA Chat edition of All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. All About Jack is a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. If you're a longtime listener, then you know it's been a long time since I've had a new essay chat. And while the shorter work being explored today by Lewis is from his academic side, don't let that stop you, because Lewis always has something practical to say, no matter what he writes about. Also, as you can probably guess, even if you haven't listened to this occasional series of his essays, the focus is just on a single essay, although other material from Lewis will definitely get mentioned. The essay is Hamlet, the Prince or the Poem. My guest to help me talk about it is Dr. Sarah Waters. She is a honorary junior research fellow at the University of Buckingham. And a few of her interests include Shakespeare and Lewis. I'll have her say more about herself near the end of the podcast. While she's not been a featured guest before, you've heard her voice before on at least one of my specialty shows. So welcome back to All About Jack, Sarah.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, before getting started, let me set the stage for everyone by providing an overview of the format. In a moment, I'll begin by giving some background about the essay. Then I'll pitch some questions for Sarah to respond to, followed by both of us sharing some favorite quotes. And then the chat on the essay will close by noting some related works. Finally, it's no surprise that considering this essay has over 7,000 words, our exploration of it is not meant to be an exhaustive look at this title. We hope our relatively brief look will encourage you to read or reread the selected essay. And that title again is Hamlet, the Prince or the Poem. Well, here's first some background. It was initially a talk given on October 14, 1938, and then again he gave it on April the 22nd, 1942 at the annual Shakespeare Lecture of the British Academy. It was first published in the Proceedings of the British Academy, Volume 28 in 1942, and for Lewis, it was first available then in one of his materials in 1962 in a collection called They Asked for a Paper. Today, however, it is best found in the essay collection simply entitled Selected Literary Essays. Well, now let's get started, Sarah, by first providing a summary of Hamlet, especially as it might relate to what Lewis is going to address.
Sure. So Hamlet is one of those plays that lots of people are familiar with sections of the story, but maybe not the whole plot. Essentially, it centers around a character called Hamlet, who is given a message by a ghost, the ghost of his father, that his uncle has killed his father. And basically, Hamlet spends the play trying to decide whether to enact revenge or not, and overcoming various things, and it ultimately does enact his revenge. But what Lewis is really interested in is kind of the ghost part, the atmosphere part, and the death part, more really than anything else.
All right. Well, now, given the title, which again is Hamlet, the Prince, or the Poem, we might expect Lewis to focus on the Prince or the Poem. But then what he really spends most of the talk on is on the criticism. Why is this?
Well, there are basically two ways to answer that question. You can go with Lewis's answer, which is what he outlines at the beginning of the essay, or what was the beginning of the lecture. But basically he says, I'm outlining this stuff about the criticism because I'm not a Shakespearean expert, by no means. It's a lot safer to kind of stay with the critical discussion. That's what I'm going to focus on. But I think probably more accurately, the reason he does this is partly because of how he approaches Shakespeare, and partly so that he can say, aha, this is what this criticism is missing, and I've got the solution, or at least I've got a different way of looking at it. So when he was younger and he first read Shakespeare, as he outlines in the essay, he found that it was really prohibited. It was really difficult for him to kind of get to the main point of the plays because he was stuck with what he calls the critic at his elbow in the essay. And he finds it really difficult to get over that kind of critical voice, if you like. So what he advocates is a totally different approach, which breaks away from what he outlines to be kind of three common critical strands in approaching Hamlet.
Well, now, Lewis talks about those several ways the play has been read. What are his thoughts or concern with these ways?
I guess maybe I should explain just very briefly what those three ways are. So basically, he says, some critics say the play is bad because Hamlet's motives are inadequate. He hasn't got a good enough reason to be waiting around, in essence. The procrastination is the kind of the only thing that keeps the play going. If you didn't procrastinate, the play would be over too fast. So that's kind of one approach. The second is that Hamlet isn't trying to delay stuff just because stuff got in his way, but actually he acts at the first available opportunity. He has all this other stuff going on and he kind of acts as fast as he can. And the third group that Lewis outlines is that Hamlet basically procrastinates because he is Hamlet. So it's kind of part of his psyche, whether that's because of the shock of just losing his father or something much more substantial. But basically, Lewis says each one of these things is flawed. And he explains it through this extended metaphor or kind of thought experiment. So he gets us to imagine that we're looking at a picture and that different groups of people find different things in this picture. They find this picture to be totally different in different ways. And he basically says, look, this is a problem. You can't look at a picture and say, hang on, I think it's representing this, and then something totally opposite to that. And then he says, but the picture in this case is Hamlet, and Hamlet answers back. Hamlet gives us something else. And so basically, he's saying that these critics are all missing the point for a variety of reasons. But the main reason they're missing the point is that they're on their kind of critical high horse. They're going in with preconceived ideas, with preconceived notions of this is how we should approach the play, this is what I want to find in the play. And so they're finding it there because they're going in with that kind of mentality. It's the kind of stuff he talks about in An Experiment and Criticism in a lot more detail. But he kind of explores it in miniature form here and uses the classic like logic that we're familiar with Lewis, the kind of it's either this or it's that. It can't be this other thing. And then he kind of obliterates other arguments. But his main concerns is basically the way critics approach the text and what they're trying to find there, and the fact that really they've forgotten both the prince and the poem in doing that, hence the title.
Okay, I'm not sure that I caught that, because this is not my main area of interest with Lewis, but as I noted at the beginning, Lewis does always bring in some interesting things, even if you're not as familiar with some of the things that he talks about, especially if it's outside of what my main interests are. So that's very good. Well, now, then, what does Lewis instead believe the focus should be upon, and why does he hold this perspective?
Well, it's fairly straightforward, actually. He says that he thinks we should focus more on the fact that it is a ghost story. Well, not so much that it's a ghost story, but that it begins with a ghost giving Hamlet a message. And that we should be really concerned with the build-up of this atmosphere of death. So he talks in quite a lot of detail about how we're constantly kept thinking about death, not about dying, as we get in a lot of play. So he talks about Othello, for instance, and that's a play where we're constantly thinking about the process of dying, but actually about the state of being dead. In essence, what he says is Hamlet acts as a kind of everyman. He's kind of like the pilgrim in Pilgrim's Progress, that kind of character who we can all relate to. We've all got a kind of a smattering of Hamlet within us, a piece of Hamlet in us. And so that for him is kind of the crux of the play. We've got this character being given a message from a ghost. The fact that it's from a ghost is really, really important for him. And he kind of dispenses with critics that say, the ghost doesn't matter. It could be any mechanism. It's not important. He says, no. The ghost is really, really important. And the fact that there's this all-pervasive sense of death and of dying, he has a kind of Hamlet formula which centers around this idea of death that he outlines in the essay. And so for him, it's really about ghosts, and it's about that place of being dead and what the afterlife is like, and that kind of thing we're all grappling with. Or Lewis argues we're all grappling with. If we don't know where we're going, then that's something we should be really, really concerned about. And we are going to procrastinate in what we're doing in this world as a result of that. It's kind of how he captures it. And part of the reason for this is that he wants to kind of, as he puts it, reclaim that sort of childish mentality. Now, it doesn't mean childish in a bad way. It means it's a really good thing. That kind of noticing stuff that's just blindingly obvious to children, but adults dispense with as that's not important, that's just part of the framing of the story. And so he uses an example of where you're telling a child a story and then you change the detail the next time you tell it. And children notice that. Like, you're reading a book and you miss out a page, they notice, because that really, really matters to them, because they're within the story. Whereas adults are kind of outside of the story, and he wants to get us back in the story and concerned with the play itself, concerned with Hamlet and his plight, not concerned with the psychology of Hamlet or another kind of particular critical angle. That's sort of what he's going for in this piece.
Any other further comments, not necessarily related to this essay, but in terms of that childlikeness, or what can people oversimplify by saying, you know, being a childishness that Lewis speaks about in other of his works?
Sure, yeah. Well, I guess I would say that I think what he does when he uses things like Shakespearean motifs in Narnia is he literally enacts his argument, right? He takes some idea and he puts it in a world that is designed for children, that is outside of that critical sphere. He's rewriting stories and he's deliberately doing that. But that's maybe a bit of a too vague an example, I don't know. But he definitely explores this, particularly in his later critical work. So An Experiment in Criticism is the most obvious example of this. So that dates from the 60s. I think it's 1961. And he is, in that piece, really looking at how we approach texts. And the kind of impressions that good readers have, only he doesn't distinguish them as good readers in the way that we might think of them as being good readers. He's interested in people who are looking for the story rather than people who are going in with an agenda. But I guess most obviously, in terms of him writing for children, there's obviously the stuff he does on Three Ways of Writing for Children, those kind of essays where he's exploring what children are interested in a text and why that's good. Whereas often that might be denigrated, he's actually really interested in the way that children approach texts and in reclaiming something of that for literary criticism. It's quite a radical thing to say, but I think it's a really important one.
Well then, now, what would you say would be the strengths and or weaknesses of this essay by Lewis?
Well, there are a number of strengths, I think. I think his strengths are also kind of part of his weaknesses. I'll try and explain that a bit. So basically, he outlines an approach to literature, an approach to looking at texts that is quite exciting, but that definitely critics today would say needs more grounding in evidence. He's renowned in his criticism for not using footnotes very well, or for being very vague in his footnotes. It's partly that was a different way of doing critical writing at the time, but it's also partly him just being lazy and assuming that we know the references. And so what he sometimes will do is suggest an approach, but kind of give it to the readers to do something with, or in this case, give it to the listeners. Now, bear in mind that he's the second time he gives his address, it's to the British Academy. So this is a group of people who really know their stuff. He feels inadequate when he's talking to them because of who they are, partly. He has a very funny letter where he's writing to Sister Penelope about this experience, and he talks about them all being dressed up in the particular garb. You can spot these academics from miles and miles. And he knows that they know what to do with his frame. But he also wants to know how kind of other readers would approach it. So he gives us the agency to kind of take his ideas about looking at the text through the eyes of it beginning with this ghostly atmosphere and focusing more on the death. He kind of suggests these as possibilities, but doesn't really explore the implications. The other obvious weakness, I guess, is that he has very much an impression that Shakespeare is great. That's sort of bardolatry that we associate with perhaps slightly weaker Shakespeare criticism, which assumes genius and therefore assumes that Shakespeare behaves in certain ways. So he falls back on this kind of argument a few times. Now, in other works, he does question this a bit more, I guess. So it's maybe a bit of an unfair criticism, but it's just something to watch for.
And you were mentioning about, you know, assuming his audience, of course, in the version we have, which I believe is taken from the annual Shakespeare lecture. His listeners would have been very familiar. But I believe they asked for a paper from the 1962 edition, which I have. I don't think there were any footnotes in it. However, in the electronic version I have, at least, I don't have a printed copy for selected literary essays. It has very many footnotes. It is, I don't know if it's something that Walter Hooper may have added since then, or if it was in his original material that just wasn't put when it was in print, because selected literary essays, for those who aren't familiar, came out after Lewis's death, whereas they asked for paper was before his death. But speaking of the different talks here, I meant to ask you at the beginning here, you had some additional information in terms of, we have this from the 1942 Shakespeare lecture, but he gave it back in 38, and the resource I had, I only noticed from Joel Heck's Chronological Lewis. He gave some brief additional information that I didn't capture for my notes here, but you mentioned before we started recording some things that you were familiar with. If you wouldn't mind, go ahead and telling about that.
Yes, of course. The 1938 date, we think it's probably October the 14th. It's at some point in Michaelmas term, so that's between October and December, that Oxford term, because Lewis probably was guest lecturing on another module. He wasn't lecturing every week, we don't think. But that's probably the first time he kind of tested out this material with an audience. In this case, it would have been an audience of undergraduates at examination schools, the whole group. But it then mutates in various ways between then and 1942. And we get some indication of this if you have a look at his unpublished annotations, which I appreciate. Not everyone has access to that kind of stuff. But it's something that I'm working on at the moment. And you can kind of track how he plays around with ideas. So he uses that image of the gallery, but he slightly alters it. And I guess he's probably slightly altering it for his audience, but he's also slightly altering the way he thinks about it as well. So there is some permutations between the two. And in between it being published in They Asked for a Paper and Selected Literary Essays, which were alluded to earlier, it's published in an abbreviated format as Death in Hamlet in a volume called Shakespeare the Tragedies, which is edited by a Shakespeare critic called Alfred Harbage. So it's a very partial reprint. It's only 3 pages long, and basically it's only really the section that deals with death. So it kind of cuts out all the preamble where Lewis is talking about all the different critics and their arguments, and really just focuses on his Hamlet formula, which comes quite late in the essay.
Well, let's now go ahead and turn a corner and share favorite quotes from this essay. Sarah, I'll let you begin.
Great, thank you. My favorite quotes are partly related to the way that Lewis writes criticism and partly related to what he says about Hamlet. So I've kind of tried to extrapolate a couple of examples. So I like when he talks about the way to approach the play, he says, we approach the play with our senses and imaginations. And I think this really captures part of what Lewis is about in his academic work. He's not so much focused on those really hard-cutting critical theories, those kind of approaches. He really wants to know how we respond with our heart, how we respond with the way that we think and the way that we imagine. And I really like that kind of approach to criticism. I think it's really valuable, and it's sadly something that's often missing today. So I quite like that one for that reason. And I like the next one I'm going to share is essentially him just using an anecdote. But I quite like the fact that he thinks this is a useful thing to include in his critical essays. And if you haven't read any of his essays, it gives you quite a good insight into the way that he handles them. Because this is exactly the kind of thing he does in his apologetics. And to some extent, he does it when he's writing his fiction as well. So he's talking about that idea I was saying earlier about the paintings. And he uses another example. And he says, if two men who have both been talking to the same woman agree in proclaiming her conversation delightful, though one praises it for its ingenious innocence and the other for its clever sophistication, I should be inclined to conclude that her conversation had played very little part in the pleasure of either. I should suspect that the lady was nice to look at. It's just a great way of approaching it, because we can all completely imagine that kind of scenario. So he's really leveling the ground. And this is something that he does. He tries to make texts accessible in a very nuanced academic way, but he uses these kind of funny examples to really get us to think, ah, that's the real point that he's making here. And then I guess I'll just share one more, though there's another example I can use if we have time. But I like the way he kind of captures what he's trying to bring our attention back to in Hamlet. And he gives a huge list at the end. There's this massive long sentence, almost the length of a paragraph. And I'm just going to give you a kind of snippet of that because it's very lengthy. But he says that when we're looking at Hamlet and when we hear his voice, when we look at him as a man, we feel the richness of heaven and earth and the comfort of human affection slipping away. So that kind of goes back to that point about we feel something much weightier than just man can convey, but at the same time, something that's so familiar to us, that kind of, he is me, but he's also not me, which I really like. I think it's a nice way of putting it.
Okay, yeah, and for the quotes I had, a couple short ones are ones that can stand alone in terms of probably there have been memes. I know I probably have created, probably for both of these ones, or the first two that I'm going to share. He says in this essay, the next best thing to being wise oneself is to live in a circle of those who are. And that's the full quote there. And just before it, though, he actually mentions Owen Barfield by name, and then also says, as well as others that he's referring to. And then I think this was near the end of his essay. He says, quote, mere change is not growth. Growth is the synthesis of change and continuity. And where there is no continuity, there is no growth, close quote. But then another short one, which I hesitate to share because now I'm known more as, you know, being careful about or calling people out to say that's not a good quote to share by itself. It lacks any context. But as something that you read, but you wouldn't necessarily maybe share on a meme, you know, on the internet, I did find this interesting or humorous. Quote, I would not cross the room to meet Hamlet. It would never be necessary. He is always where I am. Close quote. Now, Sarah, let me put you on the spot, maybe, if you're able to share. What's the context there? Do you recall what point he might be making briefly?
Yeah, sure. He's basically saying that there's something of Hamlet in all of us. And so he doesn't need to go and say, hello, how are you? What are you like? What's your character like? He knows him because it's both the best of us and the worst of us. So it's that kind of he is us idea.
Well, thanks for providing that larger context. That is always helpful. Well, this is another one. This is actually a longer quote that I think makes an interesting illustration that could be maybe said for other things, but Lewis is making a more specific point, which I'll let you remind us of. But here's the quote from Lewis. Quote, I can imagine a sketch so bad that one man thought it was an attempt at a horse and another thought it was an attempt at a donkey. But what kind of sketch would it have to be which looked like a very good horse to some and like a very good donkey to others? Close quote. So, Sarah, what's the larger point that Lewis is making here?
This is the time where he's talking about that picture image that I was alluding to earlier, where he's saying if one group of people think it's one thing and another group of people think it's another thing, totally incompatible, or in the case of the donkey and the horse, kind of similar, but also quite different, then actually the obvious conclusion is it's bad art. But actually he says that's missing the point. What people are doing is looking at it with their own lenses rather than looking at the image itself.
Thank you again for helping provide that context. Well, now you mentioned that you did have another one. Let me go ahead and close out the quote section here by having you share that.
Okay, perfect. So I think this one fits nicely with those of you that are more familiar with his apologetics, things like Mere Christianity and so on. He's talking about how important different frames are. And I can give more context, but basically the quote is, being dead is the unknown X in our sum. Unless you ignore it or else give it a value, you can get no answer. And basically he's saying, if we haven't got that answer, if we don't know what is going to happen afterwards, if we don't know what that state of being dead is going to be like, if we don't have it delineated either by some kind of religious doctrine or anti-religious doctrine, then actually we're stuck in this kind of state of paralysis. We can't move because we don't know what's going to happen next. And that fear and that worry, which feels very prescient at the moment, I think, for a lot of people, is actually something that he's tackling in the context of Hamlet here.
Well, now let's go ahead and start to wrap up here. The final section for the essay is, what are related works to the essay here that we've been discussing, Hamlet, the Prince, or the Poem? You've already made reference to one book, but go ahead and mention that, and then anything else that comes to your mind.
Yeah, of course. The book that I mentioned previously is An Experiment in Criticism, which is 1961. And it's a fairly brief book. I think it's about 100 pages of just Lewis exploring different ways of approaching criticism. The most immediate reference point, I guess, for this essay would be his other works on Shakespeare. So the essay preceding this in the Selected Literary Essays edition of this essay is called Variation on Shakespeare and Others. And that's looking at Shakespeare's poetry primarily, though there are references to his plays in that as well. That comes from a talk he gave in 1928, and it's first published in 1939 in Rehabilitations. He also looks at Shakespeare in his huge volume of on the 16th century, on poetry and prose, which is published in 1954. And he has a whole section on Shakespeare's sonnets and Shakespeare's narrative poems. So if you're interested to think more about what Lewis writes on Shakespeare, they're kind of good places to start. And I would say, as I mentioned very briefly earlier, he also reworks Hamlet at least twice in Narnia. So that's maybe something to have a think about as well.
Okay. Yeah, and then just in terms of his essay collections that are available, I'm sure maybe studies in medieval and Renaissance literature might be something that people would want to consider as well, just in terms of some similar type essay or the approaches in terms of his professional work versus his Christian apologetics. Well, then there's just a few other things to do before wrapping up here, and that is I wanted to have you share a little bit more about yourself, Sarah.
Thank you very much. I, as you mentioned earlier, am an honorary junior research fellow at the University of Buckingham, and my work is centering on Lewis and Shakespeare more broadly. More specifically at the moment, I'm looking at Narnia and Shakespeare, as you'll have gathered from some of the references. And I'm also looking more broadly at the different ways that Lewis engages with Shakespeare across his canon. So whether that's apologetics, whether it's his academic work, whether it's his fiction. So for example, earlier this year, I had an article published on his science fiction and connections with Shakespeare, looking in particular at The Tempest. And when I'm not working on Lewis and I'm not working on Shakespeare, then I work as a visiting lecturer at the University of Buckingham and an associate lecturer at Oxford Brookes University. And I'm based in Oxford, actually not that far away from where Lewis spent most of his time when he was in Oxford.
Oh, very good. Well, I know many people who envy you because of your location. All right. Well, Sarah, thanks for being on All About Jack.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks also goes to you, our listener, for your interest in this episode of All About Jack, a feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, I'm William O'Flaherty, your host and the creator of this podcast. Be sure to visit EssentialCSLewis.com for a variety of content, including a series about quotations credited to Lewis that he might not have written. Also, I have a short YouTube channel entitled 90 Seconds to Knowing C.S. Lewis. There's a link in the show notes to it. Today, you heard my conversation with Dr. Sarah Waters on the Lewis essay entitled Hamlet, the Prince or the Poem. You'll find links in the show notes to how to read that essay, along with other essays and books mentioned during the show, as well as how to get in touch with Sarah. Speaking of those notes, you can find them at EssentialCSLewis.com and look for this show. But it might be just as easy to find them where the podcast is hosted, which is allaboutjack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. You can also listen to All About Jack via iTunes. See the show notes for a direct link to it there, and consider rating my show on iTunes to help others find it. And of course, please consider sharing this show so others can hear it. Before closing out, in case you didn't know, I've written two books related to C.S. Lewis. Buying them is a great way to indirectly support this podcast, so it can continue to be made freely available. In 2018, The Misquotable C.S. Lewis was published. It explores 75 quotations credited to Lewis. Most are not by him, some are paraphrases, and a few are ones that could be misunderstood without more context. Then in 2016, my first book was released. It's an enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters, humorously called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. Learn more about it and get a free PDF sample by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Finally, thank you again for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty.